not backing down.
Good evening for WBAI News in New York. I'm Linda Perry with some of the news on the Ides of March, March 15, 2017. Justice Department officials announced charges against four people, including two Russian intelligence officers, for the 2014 hacking of 500 million Yahoo accounts. Acting Assistant Attorney General Mary McCord.
The defendants include two officers of the Russian Federal Security Service, an intelligence and law enforcement agency of the Russian Federation, and two criminal hackers with whom they conspired to accomplish these intrusions. Dmitry Dokachayev and Igor Sushchin, both FSB officers, protected, directed, facilitated, and paid criminal hackers to collect information through computer intrusions in the United States and elsewhere. They worked with co-conspirators Alexei Belan and Karim Baratov to hack into the computers of American companies providing email and internet-related services.
One of the defendants, Karim Baratov, has been taken into custody in Canada. Another, Alexei Belan, is on the list of the FBI's most wanted cyber criminals. He's been indicted multiple times in the U.S.
Belan's notorious criminal conduct and a pending Interpol red notice did not stop at the FSB officers who, instead of detaining him, used him to break into Yahoo's networks. Meanwhile, Belan used his relationship with the two FSB officers and his access to Yahoo to commit additional crimes to line his own pockets with money. Specifically, Belan used his access to Yahoo to search for and steal financial information, such as gift card and credit card numbers, from users' email accounts. He also gained access to more than 30 million Yahoo accounts whose contacts he then stole to facilitate an email scam.
Though the Justice Department previously charged Russian hackers with cybercrime as well as hackers sponsored by the Chinese and Iranian governments, this is the first criminal case brought against Russian government officials.
With these charges, the Department of Justice is continuing to send the powerful message that we will not allow individuals, groups, nation states, or a combination of them to compromise the privacy of our citizens, the economic interests of our companies, or the security of our country.
The indictment identifies Dmitry Dokachayev and Igor Sushchin as officers of the Russian Federal Security Service, or FSB, a successor to the Soviet Union's KGB. In other news, top House leaders reacted today to Donald Trump's allegations that the Obama administration wiretapped Trump Tower during the 2016 presidential campaign. House Intelligence Ranking Committee member Adam Schiff.
To date, I've seen no evidence that supports the claim that President Trump made that his predecessor had wiretapped he and his associates at Trump Tower. Thus far, we have seen no basis for that whatsoever.
Schiff is a Democrat from California, House Intelligence Committee Chair, Republican, also from California, Devin Nunes.
Evidence still remains the same, that we don't have any evidence that that took place. And in fact, I don't believe, just in the last week of time, the people we've talked to, I don't think there was an actual tap of Trump Tower.
But Schiff expresses concern that Trump would even make such a claim.
It deeply concerns me that the president would make such an accusation without basis. We think it's in the public interest that this be addressed very openly by the director, and we certainly expect that he will.
Schiff says he and Nunes are waiting for evidence from the Justice Department substantiating the claim, and they are willing to take steps to compel the department to comply with the request if it refuses by a March 20th deadline. That's what they've given the Justice Department to comply, and it's when leaders say FBI Director James Comey and the head of the National Security Agency will testify at a public hearing. The House Intelligence Committee is also raising concerns about the disclosure of names of American citizens whose communications were caught up in U.S. surveillance of foreign agents. Nunez.
The incidental collection of Americans that were possibly tied to the Trump campaign that could have been leaked, similar to General Flynn. And secondly, the unmasking of Americans' names, potentially for political purposes, which we're continuing to ask more about that.
Nunez and Schiff say they sent a letter today to FBI Director James Comey, CIA Director Mike Pompeo, and National Security Agency Director Mike Rogers. It asks for the total number of Americans whose names were mentioned. In other news, while Donald Trump's revised travel ban is to take effect tomorrow, challenges have begun, the first in a Maryland courtroom. Their lawyers told a federal judge the ban still discriminates against Muslims. Amar Jadwat is an attorney with the ACLU.
The question is not whether there couldn't possibly be some legitimate justification for some restrictions on some countries, but whether this particular order and the orders that preceded it were motivated by a desire to discriminate against Islam and Muslims. And the really striking thing is that throughout this case and the other cases that have challenged the Muslim ban around the country, the government has never denied that President Trump's statements do manifest that animus towards a particular religion and towards adherents of that religion. And they basically ask the courts to turn a blind eye to what we all know and what we've all heard, and ignore that and pretend that this isn't Trump's Muslim ban.
Government attorneys argue that the ban, which is to go into effect just after midnight, was revised substantially to address legal concerns, including the removal of an exemption for religious minorities from the affected countries. Jeffrey Wall, who argues for the Justice Department, says it doesn't say anything about religion. It doesn't draw any religious distinctions. The ACLU's Amar Jadwat.
There's no question that, you know, the lawyers who were trying to help the government out of the mess that it made told them, you definitely have to get rid of the what you yourself described as a preference for Christian refugees when you introduced the ban. But that doesn't change the rest of the ban. It doesn't change the fact that, you know, this was a desire to ban Muslims, you know, made manifest.
Justin Cox, attorney with the National Immigration Law Center, is looking for a broad injunction against the ban.
Relief that just goes to our plaintiffs is not going to get rid of the taint that would result from the policy still existing and being applied to Muslims all across the country and around the world. And so hopefully we'll get an injunction that's broader than just the particular plaintiffs here.
Plaintiffs that are afraid to come forward, according to Becker Heller with the International Refugee Assistance Project.
Many of the plaintiffs in the case, I literally think, may die if they have to wait 90 to 120 days to be able to come in. For that reason, they don't want to show their faces on camera and become a target for militias. That's also why they've chosen to proceed under pseudonym and why we're here to represent their interests, because we're not in Aleppo with militants coming after us.
The Maryland lawsuit also argues that it's against federal law for the Trump administration to reduce the number of refugees allowed into the U.S. this year by more than half, from 101,000 to 50,000. Attorneys argue that if that aspect of the ban takes effect, 60,000 people would be stranded in war-torn countries with nowhere else to go. More than half a dozen states are trying to stop the ban that targets people from six predominantly Muslim countries. There were also hearings today in Washington State and Hawaii. Attorneys for the ACLU and other groups say that Trump's statements on the campaign trail and statements from his advisors since he took office make clear that the intent of the ban is to ban Muslims. Trump policy advisor Stephen Miller has said the revised order was designed to have the same basic policy outcome as the first. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming at WBAI.org. Meanwhile, here in New York City, an all-day hearing at the New York City Council on Concerns raised by Donald Trump's immigration policies. Brooklyn Council member Carlos Menchaca is chair of the New York City Council's Immigration Committee. He says the aim of the panels is to get at the texture of how Trump policies policies are affecting and instilling fear in immigrant communities. Queens Council member Danny Drum tells what happened when he visited a local public school.
Last April, I went to visit PS 222 to meet with the principal, which I do on a regular basis. And when I got there, the principal told me that she had made an announcement in the morning news over the loudspeaker that council member Daniel Drum was going to come to visit the school. And all of a sudden, after making the announcement, a little boy ran into the principal's office and said, Miss Marrera, come to the class. There's a little girl who's crying, And Miss Marrera went up to the classroom and said, well, why are you crying? And she said, I don't want Donald Trump to come to the school. She heard my name, Daniel Drum, as Donald Trump. But the reason I bring it up is because we've talked a lot about in the hearing today on the impact of parents losing their kids or being separated from the kids. But what about the fear that the president has instilled in the hearts of children that they have to be in school to think that they may not be able to go home to see their parents, which I get emotional about. And it was a terrible experience. I went up to the classroom to see the girl, and I don't know if she believed I wasn't Donald Trump or not, but, you know, to see her crying like that was just heart-wrenching. And so, you know, as chair of the Education Committee, I think that we have to really push, and I'm going to work with the Councilmember Menchaca and our speaker on what we're doing in our public school system as well to address the fears of the children. You know, I don't know that that child in particular was documented or undocumented, but she feared that her mother and father wouldn't be there when she went home. And then I wanted to share another story. I saw in your testimony, Mr. Markowitz, as well, that you, and I don't think you said it, but it was in your written testimony, that the agents who populate the lower ranks of the Department of Homeland Security have a culture of hostility to both immigrants and to the constitutional principles they are supposed to, that are supposed to constrain them. And the speaker and I were at 26 Federal Plaza last week to attend a check-in with an advocate, which many people in this room know. And we gathered in the hallway to just discuss amongst ourselves what had happened, and wound up that this advocate was given another date, and it was postponed. But while we were standing there, security agents, and they have security agents which are different than the police officers in the building, came up and asked us why we were there and why we were standing in the hall, and they were fairly polite. But all of a sudden, an employee came screaming at us at the top of his lungs, saying, get out, you're not allowed here, get out of the hallway, get out. And I said to him, who are you? And he refused to identify himself. Now here we are, elected officials of the city of New York, and they're treating us in this fashion. Mm-hmm. And they have no accountability to anybody except to themselves or their bosses, who I don't even really think really care. But the situation that we found in that room as well, for those people who were waiting for a check-in, was also very, very disturbing. And I've had the opportunity to speak with the speaker about this as well, and in terms of trying to get them some help and legal representation as well. But we saw families, a grandmother with children, a parent with children, sitting and waiting and never really know, like when they go through that door, are they going to return back on the other side, or will they be deported or put into detention right at that moment? And so immigrants all across the country are facing this situation.
We're looking at statistics of the American Community Survey that shows that 95% of Asian children in New York City have at least one immigrant parent. This compares to 60% of Hispanic children and 39% of non-Hispanic white children.
One in five Asian immigrants in New York City may be undocumented, according to Joanne Yu, executive director of the Asian American Federation.
The question that we get over and over again with parents is around what's happening in the schools. Parents are asking what happens when ICE shows up at schools. We've had some guidelines and we've had some assurances, but the things that we're getting, we have children whose parents who are undocumented who work out of the state. What happens when those parents get picked up and they don't come home to get their kids? Do they become, do they go into the foster care system? We're hearing of unprecedented hate crimes and harassment happening, but nobody wants to go and report what's happening to them. The one question that I get that is the most heartbreaking as an advocate is when citizens and green card holders tell me, can you please assure me, can you please assure me that I can't be deported? Are you sure I can't be deported? And I say, yes, absolutely. But this is the fear that we're having. It's not just on undocumented immigrant communities. It's on all immigrant communities.
Camille Mackler is with the New York Immigration Coalition. She says since January of 2017, our immigrant communities have been living in a siege of terror.
And in just six short weeks, the new administration has put out such harsh and reckless policies that they have made our immigrants feel like they are living, that there's a war being waged against them. And this has translated into some very real and substantial concerns for those of us who work with those communities. Immigrants are now more reluctant than ever to report crime or to participate in the investigation or prosecution of crimes, including violent crimes against themselves and other community members. This fear has been stoked by the possible collaboration between probation offices or other law enforcement agencies and ICE, and also because it has encouraged private citizens such as landlords, employers, other community members to report immigrants to ICE enforcement. There is also the problem of confusing uniforms, the NYPD, of course, but the Department of Homeless Services, for example, walks around with jackets that have the acronym DHS on the back and are currently recruiting DHS police on the subways. Even the MTA has sometimes confused people and made people afraid of getting on the subway to get to work in the morning. Lawyers have begun reporting that clients are afraid to come in to their offices. They're afraid of congregating in public spaces, such as where they have to wait in line outside, such as consulates or even the USCIS office. Immigrants have been afraid to go and seek health care. They're afraid to go and get treatment for concerns because of rumors of ICE in hospitals and other HNH facilities. There's also been rumors of ICE going to shelters, such as homeless or domestic violence shelters, and we know of several instances where immigrants have not returned there at night out of that fear. There are many concerns in schools, which Councilmember Drum alluded to before. These fears have taken a real toll on everyday life, and many families are planning for the worst-case scenario, which is, in turn, having an impact not only on the mental health of children and of their parents and of their coworkers and communities, but of the organizations that try to take care of them.
Albert Kahn, the legal director of CARE New York, the New York chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations, also spoke at today's immigration hearing at the New York City Council. He says the Muslim community has been doubly targeted.
You know, yes, they have been targeted by the interior enforcement changes that we've heard described by many speakers, but we've also been the subject of a travel ban that has targeted Muslim-majority countries, the second version of which goes into effect tomorrow. This is a ban that targets people on the basis of their nationality, nationality that has no link to terrorism, no link to a public safety issue. It is simply an attempt to fulfill President Trump's promise of a Muslim ban. We are fighting this in court, and we are hopeful that we can enjoin this measure before it goes into effect. But it is difficult to convey the fear that is permeating the community right now, because it's not just Muslim immigrants who are being affected. Our office is constantly being contacted by Muslim citizens, U.S. citizens, who fear traveling because they think they will be targeted. Prior to these measures going into effect, Muslim Americans were targeted by CBP for secondary searches at a much higher rate than the general public. But now we are hearing horror stories of people being detained for hours, people being choked at the border, people being harassed and intimidated. And these are U.S. citizens who can't come back to their own country without facing this sort of harassment. And so while the President of the United States lacks the power to block United States citizens from returning to their home, he lacks the power to enact that by law. He has enacted it through fear. And so we are out there in the community explaining to people that they have the right to come back. We have been conducting Know Your Rights trainings throughout the state, primarily in New York, but also on Long Island and upstate, trying to convey to people that what their rights are at the border. But we see an continued practice of abusing the discretion afforded to CBP agents to conduct searches and to use that as a pretext to ask people about their faith, about their political views, and about matters that are completely unrelated to the scope of CBP's role at the border. We think it is unacceptable, and we need to push back.
Albert Kahn with CARE New York.
No care, no registry, and white supremacy. No care, no registry. And
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Wednesday, March 15th, 2017. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
The crops are all in, the peaches are rotting, the oranges are piled in their creosote dumps. They're flying you back to the Mexico border to pay all your money to pay it back again. Goodbye to my one, goodbye Rosalita, adios mis amigos, Jesus Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane. Oh, they will call you Deportee.
My father's own father, he waded that river. They took all the money he made in his life. My brothers and sisters, they worked in your orchards, rode the big trucks till they lay down and died.
Goodbye to my one, goodbye Rosalita, adios mis amigos, Jesus y Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane. All they will call you will be deportee.
Oh, the sky plane caught fire over Los Gatos Canyon, a fireball of lightning that shook all our hills. Who are all these friends who are falling like dry leaves? The radio said they're just deportees.
Goodbye to my one, goodbye Rosalita, adios mis amigos, Jesus y Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane. Oh, they will call you, they'll be deportees.
That's all I can remember.